class and left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved. Made by Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's do it. Happy Friday. It is October 4th, 2024, and we are underway on this Friday edition of Flames Talk, this Friday hour of Flames Talk with Vickers of NHL.com and Pat Steinberg on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Happy Friday and happy last day of training camp. Let's go. Training camp is almost officially done. Vicks, you know camp's over when the names on the back of the jerseys disappear. And that was the first thing that I noticed on Friday morning here at the Dome. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge, by the way. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Hello, Vicks. How are you?
I have a question that only you can answer.
Yes.
If Wednesday was the penultimate preseason game, does that mean Friday is the ultimate
preseason game tonight?
Let's go.
We've got
it's
the final, the ultimate preseason game tonight. No names on the back of jerseys.
No.
Down to 27 players in camp. Just a few more decisions to make for Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska. And here we are. Training camp has officially started to wind down. Rosters are due on Monday afternoon, and we can start to look ahead to what the regular season lineup is going to look like. And honestly, when the Flames play their final preseason game here on Friday night, it'll be a lineup that looks pretty much like the opening night lineup. Perhaps not precisely, perhaps not exactly, but I would suggest pretty darn close, which then opens up the conversation. And it's not really all that different than the conversations we've been having all week. But now I think we've got a pretty good idea of what exactly the final decisions are for Craig Conroy when it comes to setting this roster. I think we got a pretty good idea as to what are the things that remain now and what he's really going to be drilling down on. And honestly, in this preseason game here at the Dome to wrap up the exhibition schedule, not even a lot of the decisions that need to be made, he's not going to be getting eyes on
right
during this game against Winnipeg to wrap things up, because a lot of the guys that you would think the decisions are being made on aren't playing. So it's nice to be at the end of training camp. It's nice to be at the end of the preseason. It's nice to have the regular season and games that really, really matter. It's nice to have that all around the corner.
And nice to have some questions answered, because as you mentioned, we're in the nitty-gritty of this. There's 27 players remaining on Calgary's roster. Have to get to 23 by the afternoon of Monday.
Yeah, 3 p.m. Monday.
And it's curious because they are going with a lineup against the Winnipeg Jets on Friday night. That is predominantly what we're going to see next Wednesday in Vancouver when this thing actually drops for real for the Calgary Flames. And there's still some decisions to be made. Now, whether or not they've already been made, and that's why we're seeing the roster, the lineup that's going to be reflected on Friday night hit the ice. But I'm still so curious about some of the, and maybe it's because we've been going through this journey for what seems like an eternity now, and we'll have finite timelines in terms of when this thing's actually going to wrap. And that's not to say what happens on in terms of Monday's roster is exactly how they're going to go a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now.
Right.
But it is curious to see how the Calgary Flames are at least going to shape up on paper when it's all said and done and that deadline hits.
Well, text line's open, 960-960. You can always chime in with your opinions, your thoughts on what we may or may not see between now and the start of the regular season, between now and Wednesday, between now and the roster deadline at 3 p.m. Monday. Here are kind of the important decisions the way I see them. Here are kind of the important decisions that we can dive into, and these are the questions that still, in my eyes, need to be answered. Let's start with, and in no particular order, let's start with this one. I don't think it's a matter of if, but I think it's a matter of when, and maybe you're not completely there yet, but when does Devin Cooley go on waivers is my question. And I feel bad for asking it like that,
right,
because Cooley's had such a strong camp and he's been such a positive story here throughout the preseason. But just based on some of the other decisions and based on some of the other roster headaches that the Flames have, carrying three goaltenders does not seem to be the most productive way to put their 23-man roster together for Monday. So that's why I ask, you know, Vladar and Wolf, they're the incumbents.
Right.
And Devin Cooley has done everything in his power to push those guys. Unfortunately for him, the incumbents have both responded with good training camps as well. So when's the right time to put Devin Cooley on waivers to ensure that he is not going to be looked at strongly by other teams?
Yeah, and I'm just going to double down. This isn't a reflection of what we've seen in Cooley in camp, because for me, he's been quite good. But the fact of the matter remains is you're at 27. You need to get to 23. 16 forwards, 8 defensemen, 3 goalies remain. And it's just so easy and simple to go, well, let's just carry 2 goalies, and that brings us down to 26, and then we've only got 3 decisions to make if you're the Calgary Flames. So the debate comes, what can you do, or how can you time this to ensure that Cooley remains a member of the Calgary Flames organization and isn't plucked by any number of teams that may be looking for help? And I sort of like your idea. I'm going to give you full credit. This isn't me coming up with something wacky or off the wall. This is something that you've pitched numerous times, where maybe it isn't that Monday deadline, or the Sunday, pardon me, where you have to have everybody clear waivers so you can be roster compliant on that Monday. If there's a way that you can work around it, and apologies, Wes Gilbertson, this is transactional only, but if you can put Dustin Wolf down for a day or two to start before the season starts to keep Cooley up in order to facilitate something else, and then drop Cooley on waivers closer to Tuesday or Wednesday when you've passed that massive drop of waiver claims, and perhaps a team sees a goalie there that they like and you feel more confident in being able to get Cooley down after the musical chairs are done. That would be one option. The other option would be, is there a way to go, you know, 13-7-3 and keep Cooley up for the time being before having him pass through waivers again, trying to avoid him being a part of any sort of musical chairs going on. Unfortunately, it feels like this is one of the, I don't want to say an easy decision, but one of the easier transactions to consider, because in the history of time, I think I can't remember the example off the top of my head Kevin Woodley provided, but there's only felt like there's been one situation in the history of goaltending where having three goalies on your NHL roster has worked.
His was Buffalo last year.
I guess, exactly, and which is ironically, Cooley was a part of not that three.
He was
system,
like the fourth guy.
But he was the fourth guy in that system. So I wonder if there's a way that they try to work around and keep Cooley up just a little bit longer to avoid exposing him when everybody else hits.
It all depends on what we see. I believe there's just the one goalie that hit waivers on Friday in DiPietro.
Yep.
But it depends what we see between now and that final day of waivers. So there's Saturday as well. So Saturday's also a day where you'll probably see a good chunk of players on waivers. Then Sunday's the final day for waivers prior to rosters needing to be set on Monday. So if you're kind of, I think at this point, with Boston claiming their guy, I think you're just kind of waiting on Anaheim at this point, honestly, because Vancouver, I don't know if they're going to claim somebody. They've got Lankinen and Seelovs in the NHL, so if they don't want to go three and they don't want to put one of Lankinen or Seelovs on waivers, well, they're not going to claim somebody. So it's kind of down, I think, right now to Anaheim. And so are the Ducks waiting out Detroit, for instance? Detroit's got 27 goals or whatever it is. Is Anaheim waiting that out, or somebody else to put a goalie that they like on to, you know, come and spell off John Gibson while he's out the 3 to 6 weeks recovering from an appendectomy? So I guess that's what I'm interested in, is what waivers look like on Saturday. My guess would be that the Flames would wait until at the very earliest Sunday, the last day to do it, to see if they can wait teams out. But we'll see, I guess.
Like, if I were to put betting odds on it, I feel like the obvious or the favorite to this answer would be, well, he'll go on Sunday and clear, or if and when he clears, and then be assigned after the fact when you're trying to get to your 23-man roster. But I do wonder if there's an added wrinkle of trying to, it's not even outsmarting the opposition in terms of getting him down, it's just trying to be an element of practicing good asset management, just to ensure, like, there's a reason you signed him to a 2-year deal, there's a reason you gave him a 1-way contract in that second year. The organization certainly sees something in him. From my less keen goalie eye. I see a 6'6" goaltender who's absolutely so fluid moving around the crease that just needs some tweaks to his mechanics, and he can be most certainly an NHL-level goaltender. I don't think he's far from that. I just wonder to what extent, if any, the Calgary Flames go to ensure that he remains in the organization.
I think they would like to. I mean, they didn't sign this guy. Now, there's a and Kevin has pointed these things out. I mean, there is a one-way contract next year for Cooley, so I don't know how much other teams would factor that in when potentially looking at a claim. But I do think that also is a factor. So I still, like, if you're asking me, am I super worried Cooley's going to get claimed? No, I'm not. And that's not because I don't think he's a good goalie or other teams are interested, but I think it's because the Flames will time it correctly, so there's a very decent chance, very strong chance, that he gets through. And also, I do think the fact the Flames were one of the only teams willing to give him that one-way contract in year two of this two-year deal, I also think that plays into it. I'm a big fan of Cooley. I know the Flames are a big fan of Cooley. And so they're going to do whatever they can to ensure that they're not losing him for nothing.
Well, I do know that he had some options and chose the Calgary Flames based on opportunity, but that's looking back at July 1 and seeing, okay, who might have been in on him then that might not be now. They've made other goaltending considerations because Cooley opted for the Calgary Flames. It's something that I'll certainly be keeping an eye on. It's going to definitely be sort of one of the major storylines in terms of what the Calgary Flames do involving waivers for me. So with that, I'll be paying attention to see if and when Cooley hits the waiver wire.
Okay, next up, does Sam Hanzsek make the opening lineup? I think that you and I are on the same page that he's on for the opening roster.
100%.
We've been talking about it for a good chunk of this week. Like, I think where my read on this situation, what I think is happening is Hanzsek is made the team.
He's one of your 23.
And now would have to drastically play himself off. And I just don't know if three periods on a Friday night is enough for him to play himself off. So let's assume, and I think it's a very safe assumption, that Sam Hanzsek is on your 23-man roster. Is he on your 20-man roster to start the season Wednesday night in Vancouver? And if the answer is yes, then the follow-up question would be how?
He would be. Now, is the question, is he on mine, or do I think he'll be on Ryan Huska's and the Calgary Flames?
You know, it's always fair to do it in a little bit of both. Like, okay, would he be on yours and how you're reading the tea leaves?
He would be among my top 12 forwards on Wednesday night against the Vancouver Canucks. Absolutely. I think he's been the brightest spot for Calgary through training camp, certainly the brightest surprise. And 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, I wouldn't have hedged my bet that Sam Hanzsek would have emerged the way that he has through the exhibition series with 2 goals, 7 points, and a +8 rating in 5 games. And with that, I personally would reward him with an opening night spot. However, seeing the lines against the Winnipeg Jets on Friday night, where your fourth line shapes up to be Lomberg, Rooney, and Klapka, and Hanzsek is in the lineup, but he's elevated in Blake Coleman's spot with Connor Zary and Michael Backlund. To me, that suggests that the coaching staff is looking at Lomberg, Rooney, Klapka for opening night as opposed to a Hanzsek, Rooney, Lomberg.
Okay, so here then becomes my issue. Why keep Hanzsek up? If that is going to be the case, and I think this would be a conversation that would be being had behind closed doors as well. You know, if you're Craig Conroy, especially early in the season, you probably defer to your coach. You set the lineup.
Yeah.
And if you see Hanzsek being the 13th forward for too long, you probably send him to the American League. If the coaching staff, and I think based on the way they've rolled lines throughout training camp, I think the coaching staff really likes the idea of the fourth line that we're going to see Friday night, and that is with Rooney in the middle, Lomberg and Klapka flanking him. So if that's the fourth line that they are really liking, and there's no room for Hanzsek in the quote-unquote top nine with a Kadri line pretty set, they really seem committed to seeing Pospisil down the middle, at least for this game. That's the only one that I'm not convinced is fully set in stone. I Backlund and Coleman together are.
Yep.
I think that Sharangovich, Kadri, Kuzmenko line is one they'd really like to see work and start the season with. I think the ones that are maybe set a little less in stone are Pospisil between Huberdeau and Mantha. Do they stick with that to start the regular season, and do they stick with Zary with the Backlund line to start the regular season? But again, even knowing that, it's still like, okay,
where does Hanzek fit in the top nine if they're going to go with that fourth line? So I don't know. It's a really interesting one. I think Hanzek should be in the opening night lineup, but based on the way things are trending right now, I don't know if he will be in the opening night lineup unless there's an unforeseen injury that we're not aware of right now.
Well, to me, I don't know if there's necessarily a harm in having him watch the season opener when you're in Vancouver, and then you've got a situation where you've got back-to-backs at home against the Philadelphia Flyers, then on the road with the Edmonton Oilers. But I also look at it as simple as this. He'll make NHL money when he's a healthy scratch. Here's a little something for your wallet for showing so well.
And, you know, as you start to flesh that out, you know, there's another thing that I think about as well, and that is the American League schedule.
Not until the 11th.
Exactly. So maybe you can keep him up if it's not going to happen, and maybe he gets into a game or two, but maybe you wait until the American League season's underway and get him into some game. Like,
right.
And then you send them there. They open the 11th. The first week of the season, they play Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. So there are some games to start the year for Trent Cull's team. And if it's not happening here, if he's not being a regular at the NHL lineup, October 11th on this schedule is right before that back-to-back. So maybe if he doesn't get into any of the first three games at the NHL level, that's a time that you think about sending him to the American League just so he can play.
Yeah, so if you're not going to reward him with ice time, at least reward his bank account a little bit and give him a tip of the cap and say, hey, you really came in, you've earned this spot, this is what we're going to do for you. We don't necessarily have some ice time to give you just yet. And again, we don't know. There can be injuries between now and then. There could be injuries in that game. There could be poor performances that necessitate a lineup shakeup, and Hanzek gets in that way. But I don't necessarily think it's too much of a detriment to have him, even if he's just around practicing for an extra week with the NHLers before he goes back to the Wranglers. I think there's upside from all sorts of different angles just to have him still stay on the roster. But to go back to the original question, I personally would try to find a way to get him into that opening night at Vancouver.
Okay, does Matt Coronato find his way onto the opening night roster?
No. I don't see how
of the 23. That's the
23 man. Yeah. I just don't see a path. Like, again, if we're talking about Hanzek not being able to get into the lineup, Hanzek has been better than Coronato for me. It just makes more sense to get Coronato down and acclimated with what the AHL team's trying to do and get him into those games on the 11th and 13th. I just, again, if we're talking about not being able to fit Hanzek in or where he fits, to me, Coronato isn't quite at where Hanzek is. So that one's a little bit easier for me. I don't know about you, but for me, I don't see him on the 23 right off the hop. That's not to say he can't be up in a week, two weeks, 3 weeks, or a month.
I'm with you. Like, it does feel like it's trending in the direction that he's not in the opening 23. I think you got to be careful then with the messaging.
Right.
Because, look, you're talking about a guy that I think would very much like to be in the NHL. And so would everybody. Nobody's suggesting that anybody doesn't want to be here. But, you know, there's a young player and a guy that is an important part of your future. A guy that is now in the final year of a contract and another negotiation coming up. And so I think all these things factor in. And I don't know. You got to be, I think, slightly careful with a first-round pick like Coronato, a guy that, you know, really came on last year, and a guy who was an AHL All-Star last year. I do think you need to think about the long-term implications. I don't think that if Craig Conroy's listening right now, I don't think that he's like, oh, yeah, I should think about the long-term implications. He already knows
he's
these
well
things,
aware.
Right?
Like,
I don't think this is, oh, geez, Pat, you're really helping me out here.
Dodged a bullet there.
Man, good thing I listened
to
Flames
and subscribe.
Talk. Yeah, exactly. Like and subscribe. It's how we educate NHL GMs.
Yes.
I say that in jest, fully in jest. But I do think that is something that you need to take into account and something that the Flames will be taking into account when it comes to the messaging to Matt if that ends up coming to pass. And then you kind of give the exact same message that you just talked about right there. Right now, to start the season, we got to do this. But we don't expect you to be there for long. Go down there. Play like the AHL All-Star we already know you are, and something will happen. Something will open up. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but something will happen, and you'll be back up here sooner than you know it if you go down there and play like you can. That would be the message that I think that you'd be wanting to send Matt Coronato with if
that ends up being the decision they make.
Well, earlier Friday, we heard Coach Ryan Huska talk about the conversation he had with Connor Zeri a year ago, and Connor Zeri was not receptive to being assigned to the AHL, but used it in the right way, had something like 10 points in the first four games. He got his recall in late October, early November, and didn't look back. It'll be the same messaging to Matt Coronato. It's all about how Matt Coronato interprets that message and uses that message to the point of, okay, so this is how it's going to be. Well, I'm just going to do everything I can to prove to you that the AHL isn't worth my time. And then you're going to have to do something at the NHL level, Craig Conroy, to ensure that I've got a spot, because I'm just going to set this league on fire.
And that's got to be the message to especially a guy like Coronato, yep. I think. And we'll see if that ends up coming to pass. Does Joel Hanley stay in the NHL, or does he hit waivers and go to the American League? And obviously, there's the whole Jacob Pelche conversation as well, and those two seem to be somewhat tied together, and that is one that I think we need to figure out as well. I think having eight defensemen is a little much at the NHL level, but I think having nine defensemen is way too much at the AHL level, and therein lies the problem. Again, this is not a permanent issue, but for setting your opening, and I think I gotta keep reminding myself of that, so I think it's important to keep reminding you, if you're listening, of that. What they set on October 7th does not mean that's what the roster will be on October 17th or November 7th or December 7th. There's a lot of fluidity, and I think there's going to be more fluidity than you give credit to for how this Flames lineup evolves, roster evolves throughout the year. So I know there's going to be a lot made of what that 23-person roster looks like come Monday, but that doesn't mean that this is now permanent, set in stone, in perpetuity. This thing's going to change. And so that's why I say, if Coronato starts the year in the American League, who's to say he's not up by the end of the month? And if they do end up putting Pelche on waivers and he clears and they go with eight defensemen, and that doesn't mean that that stays the same. Or if they decide to protect Pelche and put Hanley on waivers, who's to say they can't make a move elsewhere and do an American League swap or do an ECHL move? Like, there are options that you can facilitate as the year goes along. But yes, as of right now, there is definitely a crunch, and that Hanley question is interesting too.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny in a way that this basically boils down to a Hanley-Pelche debate to a certain degree. It also boils down to an organizational question of, as you mentioned, the Flames could potentially have nine defensemen in the American Hockey League that all need playing time. And that's not ideal when six of them are 24 and under and you're still trying to develop them and get them ready to be full-time members of the Calgary Flames. So I get that. So is it, do they go 14-7-2 and the 14th is Pelche? Do they go 13-8-2 and the 8 on defense is Hanley? For me, if that's what it boils down to, the debate becomes Pelche versus Hanley. And to be perfectly honest, if it's me in that chair, I protect the 23-year-old that was a first-round pick in 2019 versus the 33-year-old defenseman who, as it stands right now, is eighth on your depth
chart.
The reason why I think
it's not as black and white, and why I
right.
think it is...
It is that organizational slotting.
It's the baggage that goes along with having Hanley, Aspero, and Tenorti down with six prospects in the American League. Just looking right now at the American League, the Wranglers made their first bunch of transactions at their training camp, sending a bunch of players to South Dakota and the Rapid City Rush of the ECHL, and no prospects, no Flames, like drafted players
right.
are amongst that group. A lot of ATOs and a lot of AHL-only contracts have been sent to Rapid City, but like, you don't want Yoni Yermo in the ECHL. You don't want Yan Kuznetsov in the ECHL.
No.
You don't want these. And the ECHL has taken massive strides, and there is more oversight now from their NHL farm, their NHL parent team than there ever has been before. And the league is less of a wild, wild west type thing than it was before. But it's still not ideal. You have so much. The Flames have – Craig Conroy has all the control with Brad Pascal and Craig Conroy. They've got all the control they need of the Wranglers. All it takes is, you know, Brad Pascal to say to Trent Call, like, hey, we'd really like player X to be elevated up the lineup. And Trent Call says, yes, that's part of what goes along with being the head coach of a development squad.
little tougher to do that when you're so far away, not in the same city. And it's just it's slightly harder to do in the ECHL. It's getting easier. It's less difficult than it has been, but it still is not the ideal place for your prospects.
No, but I don't know if the ideal place for your 2019 first-rounder is on waivers and risk losing him. And I don't know how many teams will be out there, but I just look at a handful of them, whether it's, you know, again, the San Jose Sharks, the Chicago Blackhawks, whomever, that may want to take a chance on a reclamation project that, again, you don't have to look too far back. I know last year didn't go the way Jacob Pelche wanted it at all. It certainly didn't go the way the Calgary Flames envisioned his year to go. But you go back one more season, and there was just so much promise there of a young player, a 21-year-old at the time, looking like he can be a bottom six NHLer sooner rather than later. I just, from my perspective, I'm not done with the Jacob Pelche experience, but understand the flip side. And you're right, it's not black and white. They're picking Hanley over Pelche if that's the way that they go, just based on the fact that you've got six prospect defensemen. You want playing as much as you can in the AHL, and adding another veteran just takes away more ice time. But for me, man, I got to lean Pelche on it.
Here are some texts, 960-960. This says, hello, everyone. You're assuming the fourth line is written in stone. I think there's some flexibility there, and I think that is very true. I don't think that every night it has to be Rooney, Lomberg, Klapka. I think you could filter in or work in a Hanzek and Klapka comes out, or you can work out a Hanzek and a Klapka and a Lomberg comes out for a night. Like, I think you do have those options, no doubt. Matt and Cochran says, the Flames went with a three-headed monster already before. It didn't work out then.
Paul Byron.
It did. We were talking about that just before we started Flames Talk on this Friday, and we were talking about the 14-15 season when Kari Ramo, Jonas Hiller, and newly waiver-eligible Yoni Ortio all stayed with the team. This from Tyson, who says, what would old Detroit do? Let Hanzek play half the year in the American League until Mantha is traded. John in Lethbridge says, you're bang on. Hanzek's up to start the year, get a cup of coffee, make money, then down to start the year in the American League. Injuries and deals will give him an opportunity. Hanzek, Coronado, Martin, Brustevich already are trades incoming. At some point they might be, just not right now. This says put Wolf down for now. That could be a way if they need to.
My only concern there is that's just going to annoy Wolf.
Unless you tell him, hey, you're only going down for now.
You're down for 48 hours. We apologize that you're going to lose X number of dollars. But
it's not just like 20 or 30 bucks that you lose even over 2 days.
No,
you're down on a two-way.
It's not a bar tab, that's for sure.
Robin McKenzie Lake says, waiting on Cooley is one strategy, but how does it affect the Flames' ability to possibly pick up a waived player? I don't think the Flames are in the market for a waived player right now. They've got too many of their own issues to be thinking about a waived player. Unlike last year where it was pretty clear they were going to – like when they claimed A.J. Greer, you're like, we were just waiting. I remember waiting in the media lounge 20 feet away. And I remember talking to Wes, the third member of the Flames Talk fam. I go, we were waiting. It was like 11:58. I'm like, are they going to claim somebody on waivers? And Wes goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. Like, it just feels like they're going to claim somebody. And then at 12:02, Elliot Friedman, A.J. Greer, claimed by Calgary from Boston or whatever it was. So
yep, Boston.
This says, I really like the fourth line as it is right now. And in my opinion, I just don't think Jacob Pelche is a fourth line player. I think with his offensive upside, he should definitely be bottom six. I like the way he plays, but there will definitely be some tough choices going forward. It's Pat and Vicks along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. We're coming at you right now from the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddledome, which means everything is being produced back at our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
This Friday edition of Flames Talk continues from the Scotiabank Saddledome. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers along with you, and it's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Welcome in now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And as we move towards Monday and as we move towards the roster deadline around the league, lots of questions still to be answered for the Flames, lots of things still to figure out when it comes to what this 23-man roster looks like. Gents, as training camp comes to an end, and I think that the final preseason game is a pretty good demarcation point of training camp over and the regular season begins, what is the biggest question for you that has yet to be answered? What is the biggest question that still needs to be figured out as we move into the regular season?
For me, nothing has changed because you have to take what you see in the preseason with a grain of salt. So even though Dan Vladar, Dustin Wolf, and I think those are going to be the two guys, and that's no disrespect to anybody else who may have been in the mix, but those are going to be the two guys to start the season. I need to see it in the regular season. Both of those guys have been very good between the pipes. Dan Vladar, coming off of hip surgery in March, is a perfect 3-0 and has looked comfortable and confident. Dustin Wolf, I know he gave up a few goals in the third period in Winnipeg on Wednesday, but that was a stacked Jets team with 14 or 15 regulars playing against a not-so-stacked Flames team with 6 or 7 regulars, and we kept him in the hockey game for 40 minutes, and then the Jets kind of took over in the third, but he's been really good. I just need to see it in the regular season. I need to see that the Flames goaltending tandem of Vladar and Wolf is going to give them a chance to win hockey games. And I think that they can, but they just haven't proven that they can. And you lose a guy in Jacob Markstrom, who I know was up and down during his time here in Calgary, but last season he was, if not at the top of his game, then I'd say pretty darn close, at least for most of the season. And on most nights, gave the Flames a chance to win. So will Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf do that for the Flames this season? And that's a question that I don't think could be answered during the preseason and the 100 preseason games the Flames have played. I think it's one that's going to carry over to the regular season.
Gosh darn it, Wilsey.
You I stole your thunder again.
That's fine.
But for me, the biggest question entering camp was how are the goalies going to fare? And the question coming out of camp is how are these goalies going to fare? And to be perfectly honest, they fared a lot better in preseason action than I anticipated or maybe I was willing to give credit for beforehand. And I was very curious isn't the right word and cautious isn't the right word either. But I was kind of thinking in the back of my head, what happens here if you have these three guys roll through the 8-game exhibition series and you're looking at 3.95 goals against averages and .880 save percentages and nobody really sees the opportunity? Well, to be perfectly honest, I think all three guys seized every opportunity they had, and we can look back at Dustin Wolf on Wednesday against the Winnipeg Jets, and I don't hang any of that on him. Like you mentioned, Wilsey, he kept them in for 40 minutes. There were a lot of grade A scoring chances, if you will, from the Winnipeg Jets side with the more veteran lineup. And now the conversation will shift to the regular season. And if it is indeed Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar, the question is can they hold up as a tandem? And then a little side question there that will still need to be revealed at some point is can one of them emerge as a true number one or a true 1A and the other one be an adequate 1B in that sort of tandem? So for me, it has been answered to a degree in terms of can they weather the storm in the preseason, but the question sort of remains is can they do it when it actually matters and isn't just an exhibition series?
And I think that is absolutely one of the, like, there were two for me that I entered the regular season, entered training camp wondering, you know, are we going to get, like, definitive answers? And the other one is down the middle, and I still don't think that we have a definitive answer there either.
Yeah.
Because I know that Friday, when they wrap up the preseason against Winnipeg, Pospisil will be in the middle to start between Huberdeau and Mantha. And maybe that's exactly how they start on Wednesday in Vancouver. But I'm not sure if that is what's going to be permanent. And I don't know if Zeri on the backline line is going to be permanent. And I don't think the coaching staff knows who that kind of number three center is. I think they know who is in the mix to be the number four center. It's Rooney, it's Schwint, it's Morton. Those guys are probably in that conversation. But who is that third guy not named Backlund or Kadri? And I don't think training camp has shown them enough, partially because Pospisil got hurt and missed 4 or 5 days. Yeah, I don't know. That one I still, and certainly from my standpoint, I don't know who's the best fit either. That's one that I'm still really curious to see play out here as we move towards the regular season.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with that. And obviously, the Flames have the potential to be pretty deep down the middle if one of these young guys, whether it be Martin Pospisil or Connor Zary or Yegor Sharangovich, who has the most experience playing up the middle of the three of those guys, can kind of grab that job. But to this point, I don't think anybody has grabbed that job. Pospisil's had more of an opportunity to than Zary and Sharangovich, but we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. The question the coaches had, and I'm guessing the managers had when they started this evaluation of Martin Pospisil playing at center, was, can he be the same player he was? Can he be as impactful as he was playing on the wing as a rookie in his sophomore season at center? And I don't think we have an answer to that, guys.
Right.
Right now, I would say that he hasn't been as impactful playing at center, but I think we have to give him a bit of a period to adjust to playing a new position and figuring it out. And I think one of the things that made him such a special player in this league last season was that, you know, he just, in most cases, would skate in a straight line, use his great feet to get in there in the forecheck and to bang and to crash. Didn't have to really think about what he was doing when he was entering the offensive zone. Playing at center, I think you have to do a little bit more thinking out there. So let's give him a little bit of an extended leash here as he tries to adjust to a new position. And what a great opportunity tonight for Martin Pospisil, you know, centering a line and going against a really strong Jets team. They've basically got their A squad here at Scotiabank Saddledome for this final preseason game. So I think this is going to be a great opportunity for him to show the coaches and the managers what he can do playing at center against top NHL competition, and also to get another game under his belt to hopefully feel a little bit more comfortable should they keep him there going into the season opener against the Canucks on Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't see this conversation, the book closing on it at the end of the night on Friday, October 4th. Like, this is something that's going to go well into the regular season. Wouldn't surprise me if we see them flip-flop all throughout the year. You're right, there's not a big book on either Zary or Pospisil in terms of what they've done down the middle at the NHL level, and certainly earlier in the preseason, the earlier you go back to games 1, 2, and 3, the more you're seeing them line up against players that are maybe more destined for the American Hockey League or going back to juniors. So this will be an excellent test for Martin Pospisil, but by no means in my books is it a final exam to determine which of these guys is going to be a center.
And just to circle back on the goaltenders where we started this conversation, I think in a perfect world, Ryan Huska would love it if one of Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf separated themselves over the course of the regular season and became the 1A. I don't think that at any point in time this year, at least I hope not, that you're going to have a clear number one and a clear number two. I think this is a true tandem here in Calgary, but the Flames would love it if one of these guys over time really grabbed that number one job. And I don't think that that's going to mean one guy gets 55 or 60 starts, but it could mean one guy gets 45 or 50. If everything goes according to plan. So we'll see how it plays out, but all three guys and the two I think who will be in the opening night roster in Vladar and Wolf, they've all played well.
And I will say, like, from a center ice position, the Flames still don't have their franchise center. Like, that is something they're still looking for, that guy to truly build around and be that kind of organizational pillar. But they have all of a sudden some decent depth down the middle. If one of Zary or Pospisil figures it out, we know that Backlund and Kadri are still very good at what they do. And then, look, I don't think Kevin Rooney is solidified there all year long, because, you know, with adding Morton to the organization, Cole Schwind had himself a pretty good camp and, you know, was very quietly still one of the 27 players in camp. And I think he's had a very quietly strong camp. And I know Kirkland's been sent down, but they brought Justin Kirkland back into the organization on a two-way deal because they think he could be a guy that, if called upon, could step in and play a role. So they've got some depth to be able to work with in the American League as well. Okay, Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Speaking of which, the Flames are down to 27. What, they started with 56, I think, in camp is the number they had to begin with. Now it's down to 27 with four more decisions to make. of the players who have been reassigned recently, guys, which player has impressed you the most?
When you say recently, does it have to be a guy who's just
no,
set
like
down?
In the last, I mean, I guess this
week,
training
week
camp.
And a half.
Yeah,
then. Yeah. Honorable mention to Dryden Hunt, who just continues to impress me. I mean, 3 points in three preseason games. The guy works as hard as anybody on the ice and bangs and crashes and just does his job. And you know, we talk about options at forward. Here's a guy who I think you are comfortable having in your top 12 if you need to, or as your 13th or your 14th, one of your two extra forwards, or sending down to play with younger players at the AHL level. He can mentor those guys. He can play in a top six role with the Wranglers, but if the Flames have to call him up, I think they're more than comfortable doing that. He just really impressed me throughout the preseason. And I'm going to go in a different direction. Two young defensemen kind of have me split. Artem Grushnikov was really impressive, and I didn't expect to be impressed by a guy in his first training camp with a member of the Flames, but, you know, he's a big, strong guy, talked a lot about how good his gaps were in practice and were in games, and I think this guy is going to play, and I think he's probably going to be an NHLer sooner rather than later. He gets sent down, but the guy I'm going to go with, another defenseman, Hunter Burstevich. Because I was expecting him as the second leading point producer amongst blue liners on the Ontario Hockey League last season to come in and be good offensively, but to play a high-risk game and be a bit of a tire fire defensively, and that's not what he was. That's not what he was at the Young Stars Classic in Penticton. I thought he was their best defenseman in the two games that he played in that tournament, and that's not what he was in practices or in the three preseason games that he played in as a member of the Flames. He looked like a pretty polished young defenseman to me, and you can see that there's offensive upside there, but guys, he was way better defensively and without the puck than I thought that he would be. So I know I've probably stolen your thunder again, Vickers, but Hunter Burstevich is a guy who I've got really high hopes for in the future.
Well, you know what, Willsie? I've been around you long enough to know that I need to prepare better than I did for question one. So I divided Pat's question into three separate questions because I am a nerd.
And just like I gave three separate answers to his one question?
Yeah. So if we're talking about who probably played well enough to still be here, I agree with you 100% on Dryden Hunt. I think he got jumped by Sam Honzik, but I've been really impressed with what I've seen out of Dryden Hunt. And he's one of those guys, as you mentioned, can probably play up and down your 12 if need be. He'd be more than adequate as a number 13 or a number 14. But again, if you're going to be a prospect, either he or Klapka kind of jumped him in the queue with really strong camps. And that's what you need your young players to do, is to steal a jersey off a guy on an NHL roster. I feel like I'll give a little tip of the cap, as you mentioned, to Dryden Hunt. If we're talking about which kid.
What is the answer? Let's
Hunter
go.
Hunter Burstevich. Again, you know, he does need some seasoning in the American Hockey League. And I think that was pretty evident against the Winnipeg Jets on Wednesday. He just needs to get bigger, faster, stronger, but all of his instincts are there. All of his puck moving ability is there. And then just if we're going on, who are we higher on now than we were maybe a month ago? And this is probably because I didn't know a whole lot going into Penticton, Sam Morton. I think Sam Morton's a lot closer than I ever gave him credit for when he signed out of college last year, and just impressed with how he was in Penticton and what he was able to do. And Patty, to your point, you kind of mentioned him along with Schwint as possibilities of pushing Rooney a little bit.
We need to start coming up with the rules where you can only come up with one, because now I'm like, well, you guys talked about every single one of them. It actually, the guy that I decided I would go with, It is Morton, because I don't know. I just think they've got a player there. I think they've got something there. I think they've got somebody that I think can be down the road. Kind of, it's like a really solid bottom six center for you, third or fourth line center that you got for free, that you you found in college. You signed him a little bit older, and I keep going back to the comparison of Derek Ryan. And I know not exactly the same. Like, Ryan went to Europe and went CIS, and that's how he got himself here. And Morton's an NCAA guy, but still a long road to playing pro hockey. Played 6 years of college because of COVID and all those types of things. Got the extra eligibility, and so he didn't even get to the Wranglers out of college until he was 24. Now he's 25 years old. So it's been, and he might need a full year with the Wranglers for him to be ready for that. But I think they've got a really nice depth center in the organization that they were able to sign for free. So he really impressed me. He
I think has a little bit more offensive upside than maybe you might think for a guy that is being projected to play in that type of role down the road. I don't know. When you can find a guy that jumps into American League hockey in the heat of a playoff race like he did last year without batting an eye and then is able to come to his first training camp and show really well in some preseason games, nobody thought he was going to make this roster to start. That just wasn't ever in the cards or realistic. But down the road, I think they got something, and he could be a guy that might get a knock on the door at some point this year for a recall.
Yeah, he was impressive for sure. I thought he was their best forward at the Young Stars Classic. Now, he was 25,
right,
playing with some 18-year-olds. So, yeah, you expect that from an older, more mature player. But I think he showed well during the preseason as well. And talking to Brad Pascal about him, he was considered by most around the league as one of the top five undrafted college free agents. And there were a number of teams knocking on Sam Morton's door, and he chose the Calgary Flames, so that was really good to hear. The other guy who I want to give honorable mention to, and we may or may not see him back with the Flames, but he's got a lot of NHL experience. If they need to call up a winger and decide to go with a more experienced guy, I was impressed with Martin Ferk during the preseason. The guy can shoot the puck.
Yep.
There is no doubt about that. He scored 20 in the AHL a bunch of times. He scored 2 goals in 3 preseason games with the Flames. The puck absolutely explodes off his stick. Mm-hmm. He's got a little grit in his game. Again, he's got some experience. So if the Flames run into some injuries in the wing this season, I would not be shocked to see him get a call up, assuming he plays well at the AHL level for them.
Now, I don't know if they juice the guns in the AHL, but in the 2020 All-Star Classic, 109.2.
Come on.
Yeah.
He can shoot it. There's no doubt about it.
Dude can fire it.
Yeah.
Okay. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that will wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. As we start to wrap things up on this hour of Flames Talk, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers, Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes have been our producers back at Sportsnet 960 World Control. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.